Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Even on...
Here's John Williams.
...weekends. This is John. How are you? Yeah, we did some of that. We'll talk about it here in a minute. We're live from the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here weekdays 1 to 3. Today we'll be here till 2 on the radio, 2 to 3 on the stream. Details in a minute. Saturdays 10 a.m. to noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. Look for me as WGN King John on Insta, Twitter, and Facebook, too. Remember, The Mincing Rascals is the award-winning podcast judged by the Headliners Club in Chicago to be the very best podcast in the city of Chicago, thanks to people like Eric Zorn and Patty Vasquez and Justin Kaufman and some of our friends over at the Chicago Tribune.
Well, you're going to have to stop saying that if we lose this year.
When is the next... contest.
I think it's usually in April.
Yeah, we turned our submission in some time ago, so I'm going to milk that every day between now and then because maybe we won't repeat. But the gang is just as good as ever, so we should. By the way, our news click over the weekend, the daily web poll question asked you about baseball. We said the White Sox lost out on Manny Machado and didn't get Bryce Harper either. Didn't even try. A, they should have upped the ante for Machado, 5%. B, they should have upped the ante for Harper, 1%. C, $300 million is too much for either. 94%. 94%. Paul Sullivan had an article in the Tribune over the weekend, and he said White Sox fans have a right to be upset with the fact that they didn't spend all of that money to get Machado. He understands why they made that offer and no more. The thing about a Machado or a Harper or any of these guys that work for 10 or 13 years on a baseball contract, 8, 10, 13, whatever, is that they won't be that good at the second half or the end of the contract. So what you're really doing is giving them all that money for all of those years and the hope that at least in the first 4 or 5 years, 6 years, you'll win a World Series. We had a long conversation on the Saturday show about the offense that some of you and I take to that, but that's where that is. So let me finish that story I started with Steve Bertrand before the news. Remember, we will be on the radio here on 720 WGN until 2 today. At 2 o'clock, you'll hear DJ and Ed, Darren Jackson and Ed Farmer will give you a pregame coverage for just a few minutes, and then I think at 2:05, the first pitch of White Sox baseball here on WGN Radio. So, well, it's 42 degrees below zero outside. The warm sunshine from Arizona and baseball will come your way at 2:05. I'll stay in the very spot I'm still in, and I'll continue to talk to you. But then I will be on the stream at WGNradio.com. If you're not in the habit of listening to, say, Bill and Wendy on the stream at noon, be you not a WGN Radio listener at that time, make it a habit of at least knowing how to do it. Today's a good day to try this. So if you don't want to hear Sunny Baseball at 2:05 this afternoon, get ye to a browser and just type in WGNradio.com. There will be a listen link there, and there the show will continue with fewer commercials. So
and more swearing.
I know. So if you like what you're hearing, not only will there be more of it, but it might go blue. Saturday, I was walking down Addison right next to Wrigley Field. I mean, literally, I was at Wrigley Field going around the ballpark, just eyeballing the construction. And as I was doing so, a guy ran by me with his hands in the air, and he was going, harassment, harassment. Kind of silly in a way. He was running pretty quick. And then just a few seconds later, another guy ran by me chasing him. And for literally just a few seconds, I thought, oh, these are just a couple of goofy, clowny guys. And in that neighborhood, there's plenty of them just playing. But then I realized that the second guy had a gun on his hip. You could see it, and a radio and some other fancy cop equipment. And then I realized that this is a police officer chasing somebody down Addison. They went right by me. And both of them dove into the new 7-Eleven right across from the park. I came upon that just a couple of seconds later myself and then stood outside and watched in the window as the officer wrestled the guy to the ground. But the guy was having none of it, and he was wrestling back. He was not cooperating with the officer. And a few seconds later, another officer comes by and jumps into the fray. And I continue to stand there and look through the glass outside the 7-Eleven watching this. And they're not able to wrestle him down to the ground. He's resisting in the narrow aisles there of this little 7-Eleven. I was able to see the first officer then reach over to his belt, get his radio out, and call for help. Wow, did the police arrive in a hurry. Within maybe a minute, not 2 minutes, I eventually counted 14 vehicles there and maybe 20 officers. A woman arrived outside this 7-Eleven standing next to me, and she seemed to have a sense of what was going on as well. How she knew about this before getting there, I don't know. But she already had her phone out, and she was videoing, if you will. She was recording everything that happened. She was one of those people that goes into the store, pushes her phone in the face of the action, and is screaming at the police officers. One of the officers was holding his hand up so that she couldn't video what she wanted to see. And she's screaming, "I can't believe you guys, this many officers, are wrestling one skinny kid to the ground like this. This is brutality," and she's very angry at what's going on. Now, I was watching the whole scene, and while I saw them struggle, I didn't see the officers hit him, and I didn't see the officers behave in any way that was, to me, not what they needed to do, which was subdue this guy. And do they know, does he have a gun? Do they know what his motives or engagement's going to be? No. So I don't blame now 4, 5, 6, 10 officers rushing into this store to subdue this guy. And eventually, the police are able to carry him up. One guy with a leg, another guy with a leg, one guy with the arm, one guy with the arm, and another guy with the torso. And while he's still raggling, them just literally take him out like a tuna and throw him in the back of the paddy wagon. The whole time, that other woman is screaming at the police and everybody saying, "This is brutality. This is terrible. Look what they're doing to this kid." She was trying to foment a little anger and get everybody outraged. And you could just feel for maybe an instant there that the momentum could have shifted because it was a mixed crowd. It was old people, young people, guessing the neighborhood. There might have been gay people or straight people, but there certainly were black and white people too. And the young man they were throwing in the police car was an African American. And so this lady is really trying to play that up and get everybody agitated. The police drove off. I thought, man, that could have gone a lot of different ways. And I came away from that scene with a lot of respect for the cops and the way they handled it, the protestations of that woman notwithstanding. Later, a friend of mine, it was my brother, he was in from out of town. My brother's 6'4". I say that because now I'm going to say this. He said, "Did you help the police?" I said, "No." He said, "Before the other cops arrived and it wasn't certain what the outcome of that struggle was going to be, you're standing there watching. I'm able enough and do-gooder enough." I thought, yeah, I should have dove in there and said, "Hey, you guys, you need a hand? I can grab a limb. We'll throw this guy down." My brother said, "Yeah, I'm not trying to be a hero here, but yeah, you should have helped that guy."
I bet the officers would say that they would not want your help.
I sent a note to the police today. I talked to them off the air. They may join us this week. I hope they have this conversation with me because I want answers to a lot of questions like, do they want a citizen to volunteer to help when there's a struggle? Do they want the citizen to videotape it? Because I thought, I know what about is going to happen here. The woman that's screaming and videoing, she can post that online and make it look quite different than what I saw. I mean, I think I had about as good a view of this thing as anybody, but her video is going to look a lot different than mine. So maybe I should video for the police's sake, going, "Yeah, well, actually, this is what happened." You know how they always post the video where the cop's punching the guy and you never know what happened before? I know what happened before. I didn't see the police punch him anyway. The police were holding their hands up in front of her phone trying to block her view. I'm not sure the police should do that, and I'm not sure whose rights should trump who's there. I think I should, as long as I'm not interfering with your action, I think I should have the right to videotape what you're doing, dude. I'm totally on the police side on this, and in fact, as the police were arriving and rushing into the scene, I really had a sense of admiration and respect because they don't know what's inside that store. And here they come, Jack. It reminded me of the way the officers just kept piling into that warehouse in Aurora. In fact, knowing that their officers were being gunned down, the officers in Aurora kept pouring into that warehouse, not knowing where somebody was hiding. And knowing that their colleagues were going down, they kept pouring in. Well, in this case, they did the same thing in that 7-Eleven. That guy in the 7-Eleven was overmatched. But that show of force and speed, I think, was appropriate and impressive. My question is this. Have you ever been to a scene like this? And how have you responded? And if you're a copper, how should I respond? I could have gotten out of the way. In fact, I pretty much was. It was all going on in the store, and some of us were gathered outside the store watching. But that scene with a woman trying to get everybody angry at the cops right now as they're struggling with a guy was the kind of thing that we all hear about, but until you witness it firsthand, like happening right in front of you, you don't appreciate how fluid and dangerous that scenario is. And I thought the CPD handled it perfectly. This time anyway, huh? So my phone number is 312-981-7200. If you've been to this movie, tell me what it was like. And what do you think about the videoing and the reaction from somebody in the crowd? I'll pause. This is your turn. This is WGN. Let's start with Pat. Pat, you're on WGN Radio. How are you, Pat? You're on the air.
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I ran into the exact same situation X amount of years ago from one of the northern suburbs when a fight broke out between a guy that accomplished.
Hold on, Pat. You say you've run into the same situation before, but we can't understand you. So stay there. Talk to producer Elif. We'll visit with you off the air and make sure that we can understand what you're saying. You're cutting in and out. You've never been in a scene like that, have you, Steve? Not personally, anyway. Maybe as a reporter, you've witnessed that sort of thing, but you haven't actually gone through that, right?
No. There was a time in Milwaukee when I saw some officers dealing with a homeless guy, but no, nothing like that.
Yeah.
I used to get to the scene of things before first responders a lot. And I can tell you, I saw some Chicago police officers, and they had to take down some students. And I'm still to this day not sure what the situation was, but it was at a bus stop, a huge, huge group of students, and police had to come and calm whatever situation that was there. And I have to say, what I saw was very, very professional behavior. And, you know, the only person at that time, the only people there to videotape were us, because the first you asked, what would we do? And the first thing, if I'm there in a professional capacity, especially with a camera, is to start just kind of trying to record what happens, not on either side, trying to be as unbiased as possible.
Yeah, right.
Just show me what is happening from the point at which I started to see things.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if we ever used that video, but that happens a lot, you know.
Hold on a second. I'll turn that down. The thing, too, is that, well, now I've lost my train of thought because of that. I'm looking at a bunch of calls here, and I think we can go to them now. So thank you for that. And let's go to Milton. Hey, Milton, it's John. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that if you see a policeman fighting with somebody, the best thing to do is to just call 911 and tell them that exactly what you're looking at, and they will send all the help that they need. So instead of just watching him get overpowered by the guy, you probably should have called 911.
Right.
As far as going in there and jeopardizing your safety and getting in the middle of it and saying, dude, you need a hand and this and that, that's entirely up to you. But you're not expected to do anything more but call 911 and explain to them what's taking place. And in a matter of 20 seconds, you'll have assistance there.
Yeah, and they did, trust me. I mean, literally, as I'm standing there, I watched the officer radio for help. The funny thing is, you know, if you know Wrigley Field area, there's a big cop shop like a block and a half down. Those guys came running and driving. Frankly, that's what set the woman off. She thought that it was an overreaction. And I'm thinking, well, don't run from the police where the police are. I mean, for crying out loud, dude, what are the cops supposed to do? Not respond when one of them puts out a call for help? Milt, thanks for the call. Karen, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Okay. You know, I was thinking, to be a cop nowadays, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. So, you know, to cover up, put their hands up so she can't video, that video is going to be edited. And my guess, just my guess, she's African-American, maybe not. And, you know, John, bottom line is only white people can be considered racists. You know, and so, unfortunately, that's where we're at in this society. Again, to be a cop, something happened, and that warranted, you know, the run and let's get them. And that area is going to soon be busy with all kinds of people coming to the games. So they have got to make, they being the police and aldermen and all that, have got to make that be a safe place.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. From Karen, we go to Sharon on line five. Sharon, jump in there. You're on WGN.
Hi. I just wanted to say a couple things. The first one was, I would have been so tempted to tell that lady to shut up as she was yelling, and I would have had to hold myself back. But secondly, I think the thing you could have done to help the most was just a videotape on your own.
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to, go up to the concert doors and say, I have video if you need it.
Thanks for the phone call. I thought about that, or at least videoing it, but then I so hate seeing everybody videotaping things all the time, right? Especially when it's a tornado coming or, you know, their buddy's getting bucked by a deer. I mean, there's so many instances where bad things are happening, and rather than being thinking, helping human beings, we all become videographers. I hate that. So I was a little resistant to that. The other thing was, everything that I've described to you that we've been talking about for 15 minutes happened within 3 or 4 minutes' time, right? So there wasn't a lot of forethought. Afterwards, you're braver and you're more thoughtful. But at the time, you're just like, wait, now what's happening? Thanks for the phone call. Regine is on line four. You're on WGN. Hi, what did you want to say?
I wanted to say, John, that first of all, why were you standing outside those windows watching when you didn't know if that young man did have a gun, if the police would have to restrain him with their own guns? Do you understand bullets go through windows? You were making it even worse for the police officers and yourself. You could have been shot and killed.
Yeah.
I worked downtown for 20 years, and we were in the type of places like Fannie Mae's and Merrill's Nut Shops where people would come in to rob us once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And the police would sit in our back rooms and tell us, if he comes in and tells you this is a holdup, fall down on the ground. Get out of our way because we're coming out there. Because he had shot some people in other stores. You don't stand outside a window and keep watching. You don't photograph them unless you're across the street at least. You don't stand outside a window because that bullet is going to go through that window and probably kill you.
Regine, that's good advice. Thanks for the phone call.
Have a nice day, John.
Yeah, yeah. Steve's going to do the news in a minute, and then we'll finish this conversation on the other side. But lots of interesting texts and phone calls here. This texter says, hey, I'm the police commander for the Town Hall District. You want to talk about that 7-Eleven incident? I do, but your phone number doesn't display, officer, so if that's really you, you'll have to call back in. Mm-hmm. By the way, Steve, do you know how many people? John Williams here in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 2. After 2 o'clock, we'll continue to broadcast on the stream. We've got White Sox baseball coming your way at 2 o'clock. So remember now, at 2 o'clock, White Sox baseball here. We'll continue our show as always. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be doing it live on the stream. Go to WGNradio.com. Steve, how many people died in tornado deaths last year in the United States?
I don't think it was 23, was it? I don't know.
It was 10.
10, okay.
In the whole country.
Right.
Yesterday in one county, 23 people died from one single tornado. Or I think it was just one. There were several in the southeast, but I think it was that one tornado that took 23 lives. So far, they're still kind of doing a body search. Or a person search. I was talking before the news about how I was walking down Addison Saturday over by Wrigley Field, literally at Wrigley Field, and a somebody ran by, and then another guy ran by. The second guy was a police officer chasing the first guy. They dove into the 7-Eleven there, and while I watched them struggle and reinforcements arrive, I had some questions like who should videotape whom, and what about the woman that was egging everybody on to create a more dramatic scene, and should I have helped the police officer out? That was a question my brother asked me, who's 6'4". Your texts include these. Were the first officers in uniform? The first one was not. John, you don't know what happened before you got involved. No, I don't, but I sure did see an officer struggle. John, if I jumped in and helped the police with that guy and I got busted up or shot or stabbed, would my insurance cover me for the injuries? They didn't know I'd be doing police work. I don't know the answer to that. John, Madam Secretary last night showed just how much damage a skewed video can do. I'm amazed that show's still on TV, to be honest with you. John, please use policeman and officers instead of cops or coppers. They deserve our utmost respect. They sure do. I'll keep that in mind. This particular text is followed by a smiling face police emoji. John, no matter how justified the police action is, they've seen video used against their fellow officers. I don't blame them from trying to block a do-gooder, from trying to sensationalize an arrest action. And this one says overwhelming force can de-escalate a situation quickly, too. Okay, some police officers have actually called in, and one of them is Mark Buselik, who it says here is the district commander for District 19. Mark, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. So you've heard that story. What do you want to say?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for your kind comments about my officers. We certainly appreciate that. And I think while it would have been nice to call 911, clearly the cavalry was on the way.
Yep.
I'll explain why in a second. So you did the right thing. You didn't need to jump into the thick of things.
In general, what's your answer to that, officer? If I see a cop struggling with a guy, boy, I just said cop again, should I dive? How do you feel about a citizen rendering some assistance?
Well, I think if it appears that the officer is in real danger of being overpowered, I'd like for a community member to jump into it.
This was not that situation, by the way, just to be clear.
Right.
You know, it was a standoff, then another guy was there, and if I saw getting out of hand, I'm not sure what I would have done. I'd like to think I would have intervened, but it was, you know, it wasn't at that point yet. But keep going.
Sure.
Keep going.
Yeah, and I suspect you would have intervened. I think most people would do that. I have a little background on the incident, if you're interested at this point.
What was happening there? What was going on?
Sure. One of my cars, the two officers had stopped to talk to a community member when this young man approached the car without any real details. He threatened one officer. The officer attempted to get out of the squad car to talk to him. He pushed the car door up against the officer as the officer was trying to get out, and then fled. The officers chased after him to arrest him at that point for assault. When you saw what happened, the officer caught up with him in the 7-Eleven.
Why was the guy doing that? Why was the guy doing that?
If I had that answer, I would have been elected mayor.
Do you guys know if he was on drugs or drunk or something?
No. I think this was just an angry young man who, had an issue with the police Saturday afternoon.
What happened to him afterwards? What happened when they mm-hmm. pulled him out?
He was arrested, charged with aggravated assault and aggravated battery to a police officer, resisting arrest.
Is he in the lockup now then?
He's out now.
Yeah. And then what happens in a case like that? Does he have to go to court then eventually? What happens?
Yeah, he'll go to court. And the state's attorney's office will prosecute those charges.
Have you seen, I don't know if any video has surfaced of this. I don't suppose mm-hmm. you've seen any viral video of that event, right?
I have not. And let me tell you that all of our officers have body cameras. So the entire incident was recorded. The body cameras, the police officer's best friend. And this is a perfect example of why.
Yeah.
Because you have a community member recording it, posting it, you know, a 30-second clip to YouTube, which is highly edited, and we have the entire incident on our body cameras.
Do I have, as a citizen, the right to ask to see your video?
You do. We have a policy. In this case, the policy really rests in the hands of the police department and the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. And that will be released once it's no longer really of evidentiary value. So it would be accessible through FOIA.
What's your attitude about people videotaping that kind of a scene?
I don't have a problem with it, and certainly police officers generally don't have a problem with it as long as you're not interfering with the officer's actions. You know, our only problem is then it, you know, this edited video being posted as opposed to the, you know, actual whole incident.
Yeah. One last question. Mark Buselik's on the phone line, District 19, District Commander, Chicago Police Department. We're talking about an arrest of somebody that I witnessed happen in front of me. A guy was running from the cops. It was weird because as he was running down Addison, this young man has his hands in the air, and he's literally going this, harassment, harassment, as he's running down the street. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what that is. And then, whoom, here comes another guy after him. And then, whoom, there goes another guy after him. And it was just so funny because I don't know what that guy's idea was, the first guy, the guy that was running from the police. But it was almost like he was egging them on or playing in a way, and yet clearly he's running from the police. So I had, you know, that's all I knew. I didn't know about the incident at the squad car and all of that jazz. But you said a moment ago that there was video of that, and you said you'd speak about that. What are you talking about there?
Well, we have our body camera video.
That's
the
what
officers
you meant.
All have body cameras.
I suppose there's a lot of street cameras there too, right?
There are, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, it was just a very... and, you know, and here's the other thing. Then everybody's adrenaline is on 12. I'm sure the police officers, the people in the store, the young man that they arrested, me, an innocent citizen bystander, you know. And then I literally thought about this. These guys then all 20 cops disperse, get back in their cars, and go about their day. That was an incident I talked about all weekend. You know, that was lunch for these guys. I mean, it's a reminder of the kind of work you guys sometimes have to do, and you never know what's going to be waiting for you when you jump into that 7-Eleven.
That is correct. That's pretty much the day in the life of a police officer.
Hey, one last question about that. So this guy's damage, I presume, was done to the interior of the 7-Eleven. What can the owner of that store do to make up for the damages?
Well, I obviously our offender here would be the one responsible for that. I don't know what the offender has in way of assets.
Right. The city doesn't have a way for you to petition. There's no fund where they say, okay, if in the due diligence of their job, the city knock over a rack of Funyuns and the Funyuns and the rack are damaged, the city does not have a Funyun supply of money to compensate the owner of the store, right?
No, that's you know going to be a civil matter that you've got to take up with the responsible party.
Good luck,
which would be our offender here.
Yeah. All right, officer. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for listening and calling in. And if we can do something for you down the road, you let us know.
We appreciate that. Thanks, John.
Okay, Mark Buselik's calling in, the District 19 Commander for the Chicago Police Department. That's just another day on the job for them. I'm like, whoa, wait till you hear this. Kevin, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling in, Kevin. What did you want to say?
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'll tell you what, it's going to be really hard to follow up with that. I'm not a commander. I'm just a patrolman myself, a different agency. But my thoughts on it was really, you know, the same as the commander said. We have no problem with people videotaping. Just give us some space to work in case we're wrestling with the guy, the gal, whoever the suspect might be.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know, saying, you know, recommended just call 911, you know, because jumping in to help a police officer struggling, you know, that's an individual decision that, you know, you would have to make. And we'd normally only recommend that, like, in an extreme situation where the cop's really struggling.
Right, yeah. Yeah, this wasn't at that. The Funyuns were taking a beating, but right now it was just kind of a standoff. And to be honest with you, I look pretty innocent, right? I'm a 59-year-old white male who's jogging in the neighborhood and looks the part. I have sensible glasses on. But suppose I didn't look like me and I come in to help and they make a judgment about my motives. God bless the cops. They're trying to subdue this one guy. I don't need them to try and figure me out, right? I mean, that was kind of my attitude.
No, and that's pretty well said, and something you recognize yourself. And unfortunately, we call it a blue on blue, where police officers, you know, hurting other police officers when you got, like, plain clothes, you know, undercover officers jumping in, especially if you're on the border between two different agencies and you got an off-duty police officer or something. Well, if I don't know you, you just might be another person running up to help the guy I'm struggling with. I mean, you might be a co-offender or something. So, we train, as police, we train to, look at the whole body, what do you have in the hands? What's your whole physical posture? And we try to take it into consideration, everything that we see in front of us there. But it's hard, sometimes those split-second decisions and poor lighting and stuff like that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. You were talking about the police officer blocking the camera. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I've done something similar where I just put a hand up, which is my signal to stay back.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't care if they're videotaping or whatnot, because people do it all the time.
But that woman with the phone who was videotaping the themes and really screaming at everybody, saying, "Look what the police are doing! This is brutality!" And I'm like, "Lady, I'm not sure it is, and I don't think you know why the cops are wrestling this guy to the ground. So maybe you ought to chill out, right?" But I was fully expecting one of the police officers to just put this woman in a bear hug, pick her up, and take her someplace else. Right. And maybe they don't have a right to do that. Maybe that would have made matters worse. But clearly she wasn't helping. And I thought, God, if we could just get her out of here, this whole thing might settle down in a hurry. But she was there to make it worse. And I don't know what your options are in a situation like that, Kevin.
Well, she could be arrested in some situations. We refer to, as obstructing a police officer. If she was in such a close proximity that I couldn't, get my hands around the guy, and she's, jumping right in, our face and making it hard for us to watch the guy or something. And that's something that would have to be kind of obviously played out in the court, too. But, if she's staying back and videotaping, by all means, go ahead, do it. You're not going to offend me, whatever. I know that you're, whoever that person is, they would probably like to post an edited video, but thankfully, more and more police officers, between the dash cameras.
They have their own video,
yeah.
All right, Kevin, well done. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you calling in, man.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. It's 1:52. Remember now, at 2 o'clock, it's White Sox baseball. Yeah, in 8 minutes here on WGN Radio, preseason style. Warm sunshine coming through your radio. We'll continue this show at WGNRadio.com. Tom, you've been holding. Jump in there. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yes. How you doing, John? The lady that called and said, "Being a cop, damn if you do, damn if you don't." What if you black? So it's like the same way. Damn if you do and damn if you don't. Here is the guy. You don't know what the guy has done, and for the lady to scream racism and harassment and all that, it's going to take time for us to come and for black people to get to know the cops better. Because you got to see, you just had the Cormac McDonald case. They came on and the cops lied, and they got off. Then, in your situation, it was a guy in Markham. He was a security guard.
Yeah, I was thinking about this.
Wrestled the guy down, and the cops came and shot him.
Yep. And that was a guy trying to help out. That's literally why I described myself and why I think, maybe we should not get involved, but maybe we should. You've got a lot of interesting points there, Tom. I'm out of time, so thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. I have to stop at 2 o'clock, and that's in 7 seconds. We'll pause here, then White Sox baseball comes your way on WGN. We'll continue on the stream at WGN.com.
Thinking big thoughts. so you don't have to.
Even on the...
Here's John Williams.
On the stream, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and thanks for tuning us in at WGNRadio.com. Remember, when you go to WGNRadio.com, as you are now, there's a listen button. Thank you for doing that. You can also watch us at WGNRadio.com and on social media. I'm WGN King John, WGN King John on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook. We post a News Click question every day, and the News Click question, speaking of White Sox baseball, which is now being broadcast on WGN Radio. Go there if you want to hear Ed and DJ give you some sunny baseball from Arizona. The News Click question over the weekend was the White Sox lost out on Manny Machado and didn't even go for Bryce Harper, or didn't get him anyway. And then we gave you three options. The one that got 94% was $300 million is too much for either of them anyway. 5% said, well, they should have upped the ante and got Manny. And one of you said that they should have upped the ante and gotten themselves a Bryce Harper. Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see. We'll see. Because if Bryce Harper hits 350 for the next 10 years and 79 home runs and they win the World Series in Philadelphia or... Where did Machado go? San Diego? Then, you know, more power to them. They will have gambled correctly. But there's no guarantee that that money will, in fact, be well spent. So we're without 94% of you are saying good riddance. Thanks to all the listeners and callers at WGN Radio who joined us in the last hour as we talked about that incident where I was walking down the street and somebody came running by, a cop was chasing him, and the question was, what was going on there, and what's an average citizen watching a scene like this unfold to do? And thanks to Mark Buselik, the District 19 commander who called in. I sent a letter to the cop shop over there and said, hey, can you help us out? But they didn't get back to me in time. And then a lot of you who are police officers called in. And that was interesting to hear from you as well. John, you did not see why they were chasing him in the first place, so how do you know exactly what's going on? And what if they were harassing him at first? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Although one of my colleagues here came into the studio during a commercial break, and she said, the way you described it, it sounded like that was a trap for the cops. That is, a guy does something to the police, agitates them, the cop tries to get out of his car, and then he closes the door on the officer. Now the officer's wedged in there, and then the guy takes off running. Well, you're darn right the cop's going to chase him. This is where the scene picks up with me. So then when the guy runs by me with his hands in the air going, harassment, harassment, and then he goes into the 7-Eleven. And then moments later, seconds later, another woman who wasn't part of that initial scene arrives with her phone videotaping and screaming at everybody and amping the whole scene up. She said that was a trap. They were just trying to get bad video on the police officers. I don't know what they were trying to do, but there's another theory for you. But it's funny because when I asked the commander then, I said, well, why was the guy doing that? What the hell's he doing? He just laughed. He laughs. He goes, I don't know. I'm sure the most police officers run into knuckleheads doing knuckleheaded stuff that gets them in knuckleheaded trouble all the knuckleheaded time. And, like, why they do it is above their pay grade, Jack. All I'm trying to do is just keep the traffic flowing here by Wrigley, and now somebody's busting my chops and I'm chasing them. I don't have time for the why. I just got to fix this scene right now.
Maybe a psychologist is to call on.
I'm telling you, Elif, when that kid ran by me the first time, that young man, I swear to God, I thought he was just playing with a friend. I thought he was just goofing around. Harassment, harassment. And then there's a guy chasing him. It was more than that. Did you see the Eric Zorn story over the weekend? This is Eric Zorn writing in the Chicago Tribune. He's part of the Mincing Rascals podcast, and he joins Bill and Wendy often enough, too. But this is Eric Zorn's piece in the Sunday Tribune's change of subject. Do you remember the little thing he posted? There's a picture of a Home Depot employee with their vest. And Zorn wrote, for many years, for reasons I could not quite put my finger on, I refrained from addressing retail and service industry employees by the names on their name tags. Something about it seemed wrong, presumptuous, overly familiar, even though the tag itself seemed to invite the practice. And then I came across the following passage in Jacob Tomsky's 2012 nonfiction book, Heads in Beds, a Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and the So-Called Hospitality. Quote, though people are forced to wear name tags, you should never feel comfortable enough to actually call them by their names. Gluing a name tag to anyone's chest makes him or her subordinate. Using it without permission implies that you are aware of this fact and don't mind rudely pointing it out. To pick the name off a tag and use it, whatever your intention, makes employees acutely feel they have lost their personal worth. That they are themselves included in the price. Their mothers use that name. What right do you have to use it? Just because you walked into the lobby, my advice is to ask for permission. Okay, that's way overthinking it. I've never thought about it that way. And I'm not sure that I agree with the second half of that statement. But I am not one of those people who, when I see somebody with a name tag, feels comfortable using that name. I would say, excuse me, or excuse me, sir, or ma'am. I know a lot of ladies don't like to be called ma'am. Whatever the right way to address a man or woman is without insulting their age or station, I try that. But if I see it's Joe, and I have friends who will do this. Like the waiter will come up and say, hi, my name's Bob, and I'll be serving you today. And then they take your order. And then maybe now you want your bread refreshed or you want more water or something. And you kind of look at him and go, hey, Bob. I'm not one of the people that says, hey, Bob, even though Bob told us Bob, because I don't know Bob. Bob doesn't know me. He doesn't know my name. And I think that's a silly attitude on my part, right? He did tell us his name, but I'm not comfortable. And I totally agree with what Eric Zorn said at the beginning of this piece, where he said something about it seems wrong. This is Zorn writing about Zorn, presumptuous, overly familiar, even though the tag itself invites the practice. And among the commenters on Zorn's Facebook page, quote, I'm creeped out when I hear customers address a service industry person by their first name based on the name tag. It feels demeaning somehow, particularly when there is a power imbalance between the person with the tag and the untagged person.
It's kind of like when you have a friend who goes by a nickname who is, well, I guess an acquaintance who goes by a nickname who whose nickname is used by their closest friends. You don't feel comfortable using that nickname around them.
Kind of. Yeah,
so
I
it's
get
similar
that.
To that because all of a sudden you have this person's name in a restaurant. It almost implies that you are allowed to call out their name from two tables away and get their attention.
Right. Hey, because we're buds and, you know, I need more bread here. Hey, Bob, Bob.
Yeah. Buds.
But I wouldn't say, hey, waiter. Frankly, I'm so deferential in situations like that, I actually cut off my nose to spite my face. That is, I almost get worse service because I at least this is my interpretation of me. My table mates may disagree, but I don't want to make them work any harder than they're already having to work servicing all of these tables. But I'm telling you, I know people, and some of them are in sales, and they'll go, hey, Bob, Bobby, hey, how's the wife and kids? Like, make small talk with them and try and really personalize the experience and the whole exchange. And then, you know, later on say, hey, Bob, listen, I know you're busy, but could we get some more bread here? Thanks, Bob. Hey, Bob, you're my guy. Who's my man? Bobby is. I'm not that guy. I'm the opposite of that guy.
Have you ever worked at a restaurant or a store?
I was a busboy. I was never a waiter or a waitress.
Okay.
I was never a waitress, and I wasn't a waiter. But I was a busboy and a dishwasher, and loved it, by the way. Loved it. Loved cleaning those tables. Literally, I did. I liked washing the dishes. I liked the getting stuff done. Why do you ask?
I just wanted to know if maybe you had that perspective.
At the time, yeah. No, I never had anybody sort of assume that they knew me based on a tag I was wearing. I have a couple of other advice columns. This is from the Social Cues column, not in the Tribune, but in the New York Times Sunday. We are a couple in our 70s and good friends with a young couple in their 30s. 70s, 30s. But when we invite them to dinner, we have a hard time getting them to leave. Being young, they can visit late into the night. But we like to call it quits by 10. Recently, I was having a special meal and wanted to invite them, but I didn't because of this problem. What can I do?
First of all, 10 is late into the night.
No, it's not.
Should be home by 8:45.
Is it a weekday?
Just write that down, Williams.
Doesn't say. Listen, I fully appreciate this. I'll split the difference, right? I'm 59. These people are in their 70s and their guests are in their 30s. So I can see both ends of this equation. And there have been times where Brenda and I are throwing a swell hoo-ha and everybody's having so much fun. And I'm like, wow, you are having more fun than I am now. And it's time to go. A lot of times the girls get chatting, and they're carrying on. And the husbands are like, the body language could not be more apparent. I told Brenda, I said, we should just tell people, hey, we're having a thing at 7. Go home by 10:30.
We have friends who, they've moved out of the area because no one liked them anymore. But they used to, when they would have a party, they would have an end time on it.
I think that's I'm up on that.
I totally think that's great.
You and I do. I don't think that's the way you're supposed to do it.
And there's nothing worse, because it's not fair to Sharon, because I'm pretty much ready to go home when we take our coats off.
That's true. That's you as the guest.
Yeah, as the guest.
So you as the host, you don't have that option. You got to just sit there and bear it.
It's been decades, but I have gone to bed before.
While people were still there?
Yeah, if there was a big party.
Okay, but then they were family. They had to have been family.
Well, they were close. They were friends.
Really? Even friends?
I mean, if it was like a bunch of people staying up at 1 in the morning, yeah. You ignite, you guys. Thanks for coming. I mean, come on. It becomes, rude-ish.
There is an art to being a good guest, that's for sure. But, these are, I think after 1 a.m., yeah. At least you need to do this. You need to say, thanks, we're going, bye-bye. And then if they insist that you stay, then you can stay. But I'm thinking by, pick a time, Steve. When do you as a good guest have to volunteer to leave?
Oh,
We said be here at 7.
I would never be there after 11, but by 11, I think you should be saying we need to get going. You're laughing at that?
11 is a little early.
Oh, no, not at all.
I mean, 12, you need to apologize or, get permission, right? Okay, thank you, Lois. The prime rib was delicious. And then if Lois insists that you stay for one more, well, then that's different. But in this scenario, Lois isn't. Here's what the social cues columnist says about this scene in the New York Times. At 10 p.m., say, thanks so much for coming. We had a great time. But we have an early morning, so we'll say goodnight now. They will thank you, gather their coats, and leave. And it won't be awkward at all, I promise. I think it will be awkward, and I think it will be awkward at 10 o'clock. I think 10 o'clock is way too early for that speech. And I'm not sure I love the speech.
Even if you're in your 70s?
That's a good point. Bill, you've got rude guests. I guess, right. Yeah. So what do you care if you've offended them a little bit? If they're 35 and you're 70 and it's 10:30, it's got to be 10:30, Steve. Then 10:30, I think.
10:30, okay.
10:45, maybe. 10:50, 11 o'clock.
I'll come down and say goodbye as you leave.
With your jammies on, your silk robe on.
With my footy pajamas.
You have the onesie, the great big giant onesie that makes you look like a bunny rabbit?
Maybe.
All right, lots of text about this. You can also call. We'll get to all of that next. 312-981-7200. Social cues, your thoughts, please. WGN Radio, this is John Williams. Thanks for finding us at WGNRadio.com. Yeah, we're on the stream right now, as we always are. We're not on WGN Radio right now. There, the station's broadcasting White Sox baseball. You want to hear some sunshine from Arizona? Listen to Ed and DJ right now as they're doing the Sox game. As the White Sox take on somebody. They lost to the Cubs yesterday in Arizona. I don't know if they're playing the Cubs today or not. It really doesn't matter. It's White Sox Sunshine Baseball on WGN Radio. So go there if you like, but I'm glad you're here. And if this is how you found us for a change, you don't normally listen to us on the stream. Remember, Bill and Wendy do an hour of their show every day from noon to 1. At WGNRadio.com. And this is how you can listen to us throughout the season. All regular season long, of course, we'll broadcast all the White Sox games. Whenever the White Sox are on, our normal programming will be too. So if you're a big fan of Patty Vasquez late at night. If you are a fan of Rokan in the afternoon, if you're a fan of this show or any show that gets preempted, the shows continue. We're all still doing them. It's just a different location. WGNradio.com, where you are right now. Lots of texts about the conversation we're having here. Says John, it's not overly presumptuous to use the person's name. This one says, once again, Zorn is wrong and John is wrong. There's nothing wrong with using the name of somebody if it's on their name tag. It's got a purpose. So you can personalize your shopping experience. 847 said, now, because we have different jobs, there's a power imbalance. I just read that. That's what somebody else wrote in the column. 815 said, I only use the name tag when thanking someone. And some of you said, well, that's how you can fill out a negative or a positive comment on somebody if you wanted to relay your experience to management. But this person says, wow, I am or was that guy. I was trying to personalize my interaction to make the server feel good, but I do see the point. I think I will be dropping the personalized name interaction from here going forward. Somebody else, though, texted and said, remember that your experience with other people is always better when you use their name. And I can't argue with that, but I'll just tell you, I saw Zorn's point. The people that presume a certain familiarity because they see somebody's name on their tag are to me a little presumptuous. I guess that's why I'm not in sales. This other social cue, I've just got a couple more here. These are kind of fun. It says a relative posted on Facebook asking for an early morning ride to the airport from her university. So this is somebody who's going to school. They're at someplace state. They need to get a ride to the airport. So they go on Facebook and say, hey, can somebody give me a lift? Anybody. And her mom in another town, reading that, responded, how much is the shuttle bus? Her daughter answered, LOL, but Uber is over $40. So now we know this young woman values her friend's time and automobiles at less than $40. And thinks that riding in a bus with peasants is laughable. The poster and her family can afford $40, and the shuttle is comfortable, reliable, and safe. My wife uses it frequently. Why does she feel entitled to make chauffeurs of her friends? And the answer in the New York Times over the weekend was, I know someone who's not volunteering a lift. And that's your right, of course. Who knows, though? Maybe another pal is driving right by the airport that morning and won't mind dropping her off. But more important, life teaches us lessons over time. It seems as if your young relative has not yet learned how inconvenient and unpopular most requests for airport drop-offs and pickups are. After she's been pressed into duty once or twice, I suspect she'll figure it out pronto. Pete McMurray, on this radio station, has volunteered more than once that he will not pick you up at the airport, and I don't think he takes his wife to the airport. I remember him talking about this a couple of times. He was like, that's the seventh ring of hell.
That's not nice.
It is. I think that, you know, there's friends and then there's good friends. You know, there's something called refrigerator rights. Have you heard of refrigerator rights before?
No.
If you come over to my house and we're friends or acquaintances, you'll sit down, and if you want something in, a sparkling water, a LaCroix in my refrigerator, you wouldn't get up and go get it. Because reaching into somebody's refrigerator seems to be, talk about a little violation of privacy, right? A sort of presumption of familiarity. If you're such good friends that when you come over to my house, you just walk over and open up the fridge and grab a bubble water, that's a very close friend. Those are refrigerator rights.
Okay, that makes sense.
And that's one way to judge a friendship. If you are so close to somebody, if I'm over at the Peterson, say, and I want to get up and get another beer, I'll just go over and grab a beer out of the fridge.
Yeah.
That's a good friend.
You're close enough that you feel bad asking them to get up and get
Yeah, you don't need to do it. I know I can get a beer. I'll just get a beer. We don't even need to talk about it. That's what my family members would do if they came to my house. Or maybe I might do it at Mark Peterson's house. I'm not sure Brenda would love that, but I might do it.
I would never do that.
Say that again?
I don't think I would ever do that unless they said, you know, the beer's in the fridge.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're wrong. It's nice that you feel that comfortable. I hope that the Petersons are so comfortable.
Haven't run it by them, to be honest with you. So this, but the point is then there's this sort of hierarchy of friendships. And one of, and I think up there by refrigerator rights is airport pickup. I would ask my sister to pick me up at the airport. Brenda would pick me up at the airport. I wouldn't call Elif, who lives a block away, and say, hey, Elif, would you give me a lift to the airport? Not in a million years. I would take an Uber. I would take the what is it, the Brown Line? I would take the L.
I'd still do it, though, if I had a car.
I think...
Just in my defense.
I know. You're so lucky you don't have a car. And so I appreciate that point, too, that if somebody's really close to you, you can ask them for a ride. But, boy, they'd better be close, because that is asking a lot. That is a grave commitment of somebody's time and hassle and attention, you know, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, if you really want to do somebody a solid, one of the greatest acts of friendship. I did this once for a friend because they were very close, and they were doing a big trip. They were doing it kind of on the cheap. Not on the cheap, but they budgeted their time and money very carefully, and they had to get to the airport at like 6 a.m. So I put on my black suit and a white shirt and tie. I didn't have a hat. I think I might have been driving a Mercedes at the time, test driving one, and I pulled up in front of their house and chauffeured them to the airport. It was kind of fun, but it was also as overt an act of friendship as I think you could come up with. That's a friend.
I mean, dropping off at the airport isn't hard. It's just a matter of driving there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Picking up is harder.
Because of the timing of it, you mean?
Right. I mean, you got someone in your car, you just get there, you kick them out, they get out of the car.
Right.
Just meeting them after luggage and all of that stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And getting yelled at. Finding those secret places to hide and then getting pushed again.
I'll tell you what, and you talk about people with a task, and they are going to get it done. It's the security guard people, it's the parking meter people in front of O'Hare Airport. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know.
If you're idle in there waiting, they will find you and they will get you out of the way, Jack. They're like the ladies that won't let you switch seats at Wrigley Field. They are on a mission, and they will get it done. Steve's got to do the news. You can always call or text 312-981-7200. I'm not going to say climate change because we shouldn't point to bad weather and say climate change, but doesn't it seem like the climate is changing? And I know that's not global warming, even if it is. But, I mean, this weather, we are about to set the record for the lowest high temperature, right?
It hasn't been this, yes, the lowest high temperature. So it was the lowest high before was 17,
yeah,
and that was set in 1890. And
what's the current temp?
10.
Golly, crikey.
It's not fair.
No, and really, I don't know what to make of this because... It's just the first week of March, which is right next to February. February is a cold month. So I'm, to be honest with you, a little surprised that this is that off the norm, right? I mean, this is terrible, but remember those few days in January?
But we're in the warming up process.
Yeah, I know that.
We'll change our clocks next week.
I know. How awesome is that going to be? But, I mean, in a few days, it's going to be back to 30 degrees.
And, no, it's not.
No.
I mean, so, not until Friday.
Huh?
34.
You got the weather there? What are you, a newsman?
Maybe 40 on Saturday.
What's the normal high today?
The normal high today is warmer than this.
Yeah, producer Elif, you'll need to look that up. I don't know if Elif is able to do this. Hey, Elif. She's not even listening. That's Chet. Elif. Elif on the radio. Yoo-hoo. Producer Elif. Will you look up and find out what the average high temperature is for today? Thank you.
Sure.
About the last series of conversations about behavior, John, when we were in our late 50s, a 30-ish couple moved in next door and instructed their preschool daughter to call us by our first names. It was uncomfortable and presumptuous. Are you old and stuffy enough, Steve, that you don't like children calling you by your first name? It should be Mr. Bertrand rather than Steve?
No, I don't care, but I don't think it should be some other kid's parents' decision.
Right, that's a gift you give to the child.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It used to bug me a lot more than it does now. And that was when I was like in my 30s and 40s, and we were running around with a lot of little kids all the time. And I'm like, no, I'm Mr. Williams.
Oh, really? You didn't like being called John?
No, I did not.
I don't think many people did call me John, but...
630.
Or Steve.
Right, yeah.
Almost nobody called me John.
The first one was better. 630 says, hey, I live in Nashville, and my dad lives in Naperville. He refuses to drive me to or pick me up from the airport when I visit home. We finally made a deal that he'll pay for the Uber. LOL. All right, if you're flying in to visit me from Nashville, thank you. You've just incurred an expense and a cost on the other end. Should I feel any, I don't want to use the word obligation, but should I help that person out by getting them a ride to my place from the airport? So they're flying from Nashville to O'Hare, and now they're sitting there at O'Hare. Now they got to get a ride. If they're not renting, if they don't need a car that they're going to rent, they're going to have to Uber, take a cab. They're going to find a way to get to my place. Should I pick them up?
Depends on where you live. Maybe you should.
Yeah.
Me? I mean, it's pretty easy for me to get to my house.
It's not easy? Or
it is pretty easy from O'Hare.
So easy for them to get a cab? Is that what you're
right,
saying?
Or an Uber.
Well, if it's that easy, why don't you pick them up?
Well, I'd pick you up, John. Anytime I would pick you up.
What are you thinking there, Producer Olive?
I was saying I have an answer to your question.
Right. But, John, I wouldn't take you into the city to your house.
So suppose I lived in Joliet, which is, you know, about an hour away from O'Hare.
No, I'd take you back to my house where you can catch a metro train.
How about this one? 630. John, I dropped a friend. I dropped a friend because they weren't working when they used GoFundMe to raise money so she could take a trip to Miami to participate in American Ninja Warrior. I could not believe she was using GoFundMe for that purpose. She wasn't even working. I was happy to see her go down on the first obstacle, which almost no one fails. It's not appropriate use of GoFundMe.
That's kind of funny.
It's not appropriate use of GoFundMe. GoFundMe should be for... I don't know what GoFundMe should be for. I get the point here. And, John, I have another GoFundMe, no-no, if you want to hear it, that another friend of mine did. I'm not sure what the rules of engagement for GoFundMe should be. If it's something extraordinary, like let's help this person out, or something, of course, I have mixed feelings about people funding their debt. Students have funded debt that way when they overspent themselves. Now, this person says, if you want to hear my other one, here's my phone number. Okay, so this person's on line 7. Hey, Nick, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. So what's the other no-no for you for GoFundMe?
Well, the other one, there's probably a bunch of them. I just haven't seen them yet, but the ones that have come across my Facebook feed, a friend of mine that lives down in Florida, she's self-employed. She's in the fitness industry, and she tore her ACL. So she didn't have health insurance, which she should have had health insurance. I'm self-employed. I have health insurance. And I got it at a pretty reasonable rate, actually. I know that's not the case for a lot of people, but I'm okay in that area. But anyway, she tore her ACL, and she started a GoFundMe account to raise money for her surgery. And I chose not to donate to it. And I simply told, I gave her some options on how, I mean, I know it's not going to help her now. She did get her knee fixed. It's all taken care of. She's on the mend through physical therapy. But she does have insurance now through Affordable Health Care Act. So, but I just thought, I'm not going to contribute to her irresponsibility.
How much money did she raise on GoFundMe?
She was trying to raise around, I want to say $8,000, somewhere between $5,000 and $8,000. I don't think she got the goal, but she got quite a bit of it.
Really? And the fact that you didn't donate, was that evident to her? Was it conspicuous?
I don't know. I mean, she got a few hundred Facebook friends. I don't know if she noticed or not, but I definitely made a point to say it was on one of her Facebook threads. I made a point to say that she should have health insurance, and here's how you go about doing it. And I don't think I said it was irresponsible, but I kind of hinted towards that. So I didn't get a response on that comment.
But. Yeah, but I mean, that's it. You could have dodged that whole thing, but no. Nick had to point out that she was being irresponsible, and you weren't going to donate.
But exactly. Let me ask you something. What does she do for her self-employed job?
She is a yoga instructor and dance instructor. and at high risk anyways for something like that. I'm a personal trainer. So, you know, when you're active like that, that's something you should be thinking about in the back of your head, and apparently she was not. So,
go ahead, Ella.
My concern, though, is she doing something that's her dream job? So, because if she is and she's working actively at it, then you shouldn't punish her in that way.
Well, could she have had insurance?
Oh, she's paying about $106 a month now, so she easily could have had health insurance. And she just chose not to do it for whatever reason.
Because this all happened when she had the Affordable Care Act available to her. Now you go, all right, well, now you didn't get insurance, and now look what happened, Missy.
Exactly.
By the way, when she elected not to get the insurance, then did she have to pay a penalty? Because that's the idea, right?
I'm sure she must have, because at least for the several years that we had that mandate. So
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
And for the record, I just want to say I'm 47, and I think when you're at that age, I don't think you should be asking your friends to help you move, or your family or friends to help you move, or for rides.
Yeah, that's right.
It. When you get to a certain when you're in your 20s, no problem. But when you're in your 40s, 50s, I think that's done. You gotta just call an Uber, get a cab, and call two guys in a truck. That's it.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
No.
That's how I feel.
that seems really.
There comes a certain point in life where if you're doing it correctly, you should be sufficiently self-sufficient, so that you don't have to impose on people. We're not in college, and we're all moving each other in and out of dorms in our first apartments.
Because
I'll tell you what.
Well, this just happened to me last week, because we moved my mother-in-law from a condo into a new place.
Right. Well, you're not expecting her to do it on her own.
Well, what the hell? Why not? No. And but I asked my best friend to do it, and so we were doing it together. And, you know, it wasn't the whole thing. I thought it was going to be one truck. It turned out it was two. It was a nightmare. And at the end, I said, look, I really appreciate it. I said, if you ever need help with your dad or anything else. And he goes, no. He says, I have a rule. I never ask anyone to help me move, and I never help anyone. I'm like, oh.
There you go.
I didn't realize.
Well, did you drop a gift card to let us entertain you on him or something like that?
We're friends. That's what friends do.
Oh, Steve.
No, we'll take him out to dinner.
Steve,
we'll go for dinner.
I think you owe him a nice.
No, we'll go for dinner.
Where are you going to go?
It's somewhere.
Not Portillo's.
No.
Yeah. All right, Nick. Thanks for the call, man.
Thanks, John. No problem. Have a good day.
So, it was over $1,000 for the move, and we did it with the two U-Haul trips.
Yeah, for a couple $100 for renting a U-Haul.
$60.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, you didn't have to drive very far, huh?
Right.
So what would you say, refrigerator rights, that's where you can just go into somebody's fridge without asking. You're such good friends. O'Hare Airport pickup, we're such good friends that you'll pick me up at the airport, and it's reasonable that I ask. And moving me in or out of my apartment, condo, or home, we're such good friends, of course you'll help out. I don't even have to give you a gift card to Portillo's. Would you rank, sort of, Steve, the inconvenience of those? Like, which is the greatest display of friendship?
Well, it's funny, because obviously the biggest ordeal would be moving.
Yeah, right.
But I think the most intimate one is the refrigerator.
Yeah, right.
Now,
yeah.
If you come to my house and I say, all right, here's your first beer. If you want another one, they're all in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But if you just pop into the house and open up the door to see what's in the fridge, that's pretty rare, I think.
Can we just rewind back to what the listener said about people moving on their own?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't physically possible. First of all, I couldn't pay for movers. And second of all, I couldn't physically possible.
You couldn't
physically move heavy furniture. I could get a hernia.
Right.
So.
What were you supposed to do? Accept the kindness of strangers and family and friends, right?
Right. I don't have a boyfriend who I can just call.
That's what
over.
You need to do. When you need to move, you need to get yourself a boyfriend.
Which is so annoying, right?
But you don't have to have him for long.
What I mean?
Have him for like a week. Like, if you know you're going to move the 1st of March, then Valentine's Day, you get yourself a boyfriend, get that thing going, and then by the 1st of March, he's moving your furniture, not into his place. And then March 15th, you go, I really think we're going in different directions.
All right.
I'm being silly. Well, I think that was the point about the age part of that, Elif. That if you're at a certain age, yeah, of course, it's reasonable to expect a person to be able to manage this on their own. But if you're just starting out, or if you're
not 100 pounds and aren't big and strong to move a sofa, you got to find somebody to help you out.
Well, then, is the expectation that by the age of 47, you have a job that will allow you to pay for movers?
Yes.
Okay.
And if you don't, I'm not, that sounds judgmental, because I don't mean it to be that way.
No, but I understand.
But I think
point.
That's a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, I get that.
I think you're calling me a heel on your little stream show today.
Awful chatty on the stream.
Well, we're not done moving her, by the way, so there will be some future need for more help.
This is your mother-in-law, Steve. That's a different conversation. You do whatever your wife and mother-in-law want you to do.
No, I'm saying we have more moving to do, so I might call. How close are we, you and I?
I would come and help you, Steve. If you said, hey, I'm moving my mother-in-law. And you know what? Who else? I'd get Kevin up there, too. Kevin would help you as well. He's in sports. I don't know if he's listening to us right now. But we've got young, strapping people in this building. I'll add another layer to that. It's not, will you help me move? It's, do you have a pickup truck or a van? That's another one I've struggled with, because Brenda and I have always had sedans and things like Priuses, right? And so I'm like, there are times where... If somebody was talking to my ear, Alpha, that went to me, not to whoever it was going to. You hate to ask to borrow somebody's truck. You hate to ask to borrow somebody's minivan. But sometimes that's the only way you can move something, shy of renting a truck for $100 a day or whatever. One last social cue for Miss Manners. Dear Miss Manners, my brother is getting married this year for the fifth time. How much do I spend on a gift? Gentle reader, traditionally, presents are given only for first weddings. Of course, there is nothing against doing so anyway, if one is so inclined. If you are, Miss Manners can only admire your optimism. Kim Gordon's now sat in the WGN Radio News desk. She's getting ready to anchor at 2, pardon me, at 3, and then through the afternoon as we broadcast White Sox baseball on WGN Radio. Rokan and Anna will return to not just the stream, but WGN Radio at the end of the game. Thanks for joining us at WGNRadio.com. My brother's getting married this year for the fifth time. How much do I spend on a gift? I would say first time they get married, yes. Second time someone gets married, I don't think you're a fool to buy them a gift, be them your brother or otherwise. Let's give everybody a mulligan, right? Third time, wow. Fourth time, no. Fifth time, are you kidding me? Right? Like, the fifth time, you don't even get to register in my world.
Yeah.
Now, say it's his fifth, but her first. Tough for her. Tough for her. But I still don't think there's... That's interesting.
Her side of the family can...
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? Because if it's her first, or, you know, if one of them's getting married the first time, then it's they might have a reasonable expectation to get some of the treatment that a first-time bride or groom gets. But I'm sure he's got all the towels he needs from the four previous weddings, and you knew what you were getting into. So you just have to sort of manage your expectations, right?
This person really hot from... Wife to wife.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's five is a lot.
Pretty deep there.
Three to me is not even... I know people who've been married three times and I think are lovely people. And I don't think they're bad. I think sometimes they've just made some bad decisions. Even the people they separated from a couple of times aren't terrible people. It's just human beings, you know, make mistakes sometimes.
They should learn their lesson after a certain point, don't you think?
Well, I think after four or five, you should at least learn that I don't have to buy you any more things now. I don't care. And by the way, I don't even think you should have a big reception. That's the equation, right? It's like if you invite me to your wedding and reception, you've really invited me to be a part of an important part of your life that, by the way, costs us a lot of money. So somewhere in somebody's mind, or whatever it costs, then you say, okay, I will reciprocate by attending, being part of this event, and since you bought my dinner and beer at the bar, I'll go ahead and give you something you registered for at Home Depot or Target or Fields or wherever, Fields, wherever you registered from. But fourth or fifth, I don't even think any of those things apply. But again, I've not been down that road. It's 2:51 WGN Radio. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis will entertain and inform you in about 6 minutes after WGN Radio News. They'll step by and say hi in a couple, and then they'll do their show here at WGNRadio.com. And then on WGN Radio, when our broadcast of White Sox baseball is over on the radio side, if you want to hear some sunshine from Arizona, Ed and DJ and the White Sox, go there. And if not, remember that you can always be here all season long when Ro and Anna are normally on. If you hear White Sox baseball and that's not what you want to listen to them at WGNRadio.com. Just dial us in the way you have now. Remember, you can always watch on WGNRadio.com as well. By the way, Anna DeVlantis just strolled into the studio.
Yes, I did. To join you.
I wanted to play just a couple of sound bites from the weekend in the news, but I wanted to bounce this one off of you. Mm-hmm. We're a couple in our mid-70s. This is the Social Cues column from the New York Times on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
What's your answer to, we're a couple in our 70s and good friends with a young couple in their 30s. When we invite them to dinner, we have a hard time getting them to leave. Being young, they can visit late into the night. But we like to call it quits by 10. Recently, I was having a special meal and wanted to invite them, but didn't because of this problem. What can I do? And the answer, according to the Social Cues, Philip Galanis, is...
Well, can I take a stab at it?
Oh, yeah. So, pardon me.
My stab would be you pull the old person card. You know, you are older. You say, hey, guys, you know, we love your company, but we can't last as long as you can. Something like that.
Do you say that when they walk in, or do they know that as part of the invitation?
I think you say it at a certain point in the evening and say, you guys, we love hanging out with you, and it's so much fun, but we can't last as long as you. That's how I would handle it. I think that's one of the benefits of being older. You get to pull stuff like that.
That's exactly what they said.
See? I could write that column.
At 10 p.m. At what time do you say that, by the way? This says 10 p.m.
I think, yeah, well, with the first sign of just sort of being, you know, like you're not going to be as entertaining of a host anymore. Like you're not going to be up to be able to fill their wine glasses and do the things that a host does, that you just feel you're slipping away.
At 10 p.m., say, thanks so much for coming. We had a great time. But we have an early morning, which, by the way, if we're all about, I'm not sure I like that. Maybe you don't have an early morning. But we have an early morning, so we'll say goodnight now. They'll thank you, gather their coats, and leave, and it won't be awkward at all, I promise, says the Social Cues column in the New York Times on Sunday, which is now going to be written by one Anna DeVlantis.
Take a stab at a couple of those.
Yeah, no kidding.
I wouldn't be offended, would you, if we were over at an older couple's home?
I would be embarrassed that it came to that. Like, I'd look at my watch and go, oh, geez. You know, I feel bad now. It would be awkward, I think, for everybody, but I don't think it means we can't be friends and won't be invited over again.
Right. Just come over a little earlier next time. Start the night at 4:30.
I said to Brenda that when we invite people via email or paper or whatever, I would like to say we're having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be there and then put 7 to 10.
See, there you go.
That would work for me.
I find when you have young children, too, you don't want the evening to go so late because you know you have a hard start to your day the next day.
There's an art to being a good guest, too.
I think that's right.
Did you watch Saturday Night Live?
I didn't, but I saw some of the clips.
Okay, so as a person who has a dog stroller, because we had, for a while,
you
Bingo.
Have a dog stroller?
Yeah, well, we had a Bingo who we had to put down several months ago.
Oh.
But he couldn't walk very well.
Oh.
It wasn't because...
So it wasn't sort of the frou-frou one that just...
It was out of necessity.
Oh.
Okay, so, but I have a fondness and understanding in my heart for people who have dog strollers. Rokan now strolling into the studio.
I don't think he has a dog stroller yet, but...
Do you have a dog stroller?
Not yet. There I am. Am I here?
Yeah, you're here.
I don't know.
Okay, so this is John Mulaney on Saturday. This just takes like 30 seconds, 1 minute.
We got this. An amazing bit.
It's everything Mulaney does.
Mm-hmm. He could not be better. It's amazing how from 0 to 100 that guy went.
Right. By that you mean his life was miserable and then he reclaimed it, or how funny he always is?
How funny he is and what a great stand-up he is, and that's not how he started.
Okay, here he is on Saturday Night Live.
My wife and I have a French bulldog. Her name is Petunia. She's a little French bulldog. She's great. She's got a little flat face. She likes to walk, but she can't walk far because she can't breathe well by design. So we push her around New York in a stroller. That's absolutely true. And this next story is also absolutely true. My wife was pushing our bulldog Petunia in a stroller down 7th Avenue South a few months ago. She's pushing her down 7th Avenue. My wife gets to 7th Avenue and Leroy Street. At 7th Avenue and Leroy Street, a car pulls up. Out of the car steps Woody Allen and Soon-Yi Previn. My wife stares at Woody and Soon-Yi. Woody and Soon-Yi stare at a woman pushing a bulldog in a stroller. The four of them stare at each other. And then they all kind of nod as if to say, none of this is right. And then they went their separate ways.
I got that look a lot.
Was the dog staring that way too, in the yeah. judgy way too? Because those yeah. bulldogs can look a little judgy when they look at you.
All right, so I got my my grand dog this weekend.
Oh Lord!
And he is a he's an English bulldog, and as a puppy, he's got that look. It's so funny. He was sitting on my lap. My daughter took a picture of him on my lap, and then I was sending it out to my friends, and they're all like, "What's he mad at?" Because he's got that look like that what look. The he's already he's 13 weeks old and yeah. he's already mad at the world.
Yeah.
So I sort of understand this. And now here's mm-hmm. here's the damnedest thing. My daughter calls me a couple of hours ago. I was like, "Dad, I need you to watch the dog
See?
On Thursday."
See?
From, you know, time to time.
Here it comes.
Yeah, I know. And
it's
I'm like,
all right,
and I'm like, "Okay,
they're cute.
What time can I be there?" And then I realize, I may have to take him back with me. But it's I just can't now. I can't let go of him. I want to steal the dog.
Yeah. That's
until he does something on your carpet.
What color is your furniture, your sofa? You got white shag.
Very nice things in your house.
I do, but I've been down this road before with dogs. And I, you know what I'm going to invent? I'm going to invent the rolling pen. Where you could take, like, it's a pen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a good idea.
Like so, a playpen for
like
kids.
Like a playpen for, but on for
wheels.
Dogs, right?
Like
on wheels.
Yeah.
So you just move it around from room to room.
Trap them wherever you need them to be corralled.
And actually put a little hole in it so they can move it themselves if they want. They just can't get into rooms that can't, that, you know, are too small.
Well, that's, you know, if this radio thing doesn't work out.
I'm going on Shark Tank with that.
Yeah, you do that. All right, you guys continue on the stream. And
yes.
Remember now, all season long on WGN Radio, if you don't want to listen to baseball, we hope you do. But if you don't, we're doing our shows here at WGNRadio.com.
Be careful how much you hope there, John. We would like them to listen to us, too.
Well, what did I just say?
You hope they listen to baseball.
I thought you were very diplomatic, John.
Very diplomatic. Well, I mean, if you want to listen to baseball, it's an option.
That was a damned if I do, damned if I don't, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'll get out of here. Goodbye now.